From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of August 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Emerson Nafziger, Extension agronomist, will join us to discuss yesterday's windstorm across the Corn Belt and the impact it's not likely, that's right, not likely to have on yield as it relates to the national yield at the end of the year. And then, of course, we'll also talk about the agricultural energies on this Tuesday. That was Stephen Platt at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today at $3.11.5, up 1 cent. December at $3.23.5. That's the harvest month a half higher. And the March corn up a half cent at $3.35.25. May $3.43.25, a quarter higher. In July unchanged at $3.49.5. August beans at $3.78, 1.5 cents higher. September settled up a half at $8.70.5. And November beans, $8.73.5, a quarter higher. January down a quarter at $8.79. Bean oil futures at $31.06, 13 cents lower. The bean meal down 20 at $282. September soft red winter wheat up 4 at $4.95. July of next year at $5.20, up 3. And hard red July finished at $4.54.75, a penny higher for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago. October contracted $108.30, $1.15 higher. August feeders at $144.50, up 92.5 cents. And lean hogs in the August contract at $53.75, down a nickel. The October, though, down $2 at $51.82.5. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago today and take a quick look at tomorrow's USDA 11 a.m. Central Time crop production report. It is the first one of the year, Wayne. And people are really looking forward to it. What are the expectations like?
Well, you know, they've went up since our last government guesstimate. Basically, a lot of the trader, the average guess is for a yield in corn at 180.4. You know, and we started out at 78.5 last time. So, you know, that's up considerably, and that would make a production level of 15.182. You know, as far as we're looking at the ending stocks for 1920, probably a 2.268 on the corn and a 6.17 on the beans. And then for next year, when adding in the production that we're looking at out in the field, we're at a 2.8 on the corn and a 5.17 on the beans. So some big numbers there. And, of course, they won't have factored anything into what happened in Iowa in those numbers. But we will also be getting the FSA dump on what the planted acres was in the afternoon tomorrow.
Yeah, so lots of things are happening. And, of course, those winds that came through Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana were just devastating, especially to some buildings. I know the crop has taken a hit. Emerson Nafziger we'll hear from in just a bit. And I know you've heard this already. Talking about the damage and the likelihood that it won't have that big of an impact. But if you've got a field that's down, it's got to feel awful. And some of them clearly will not be able to recover very much. I don't know what you've heard about the damage so far.
You know, when I've talked to the guys that we know in Iowa that way, why they were not in very good spirits. I mean, they were tool sheds blown away, bins blown over, all that, let alone their crop laying over. And, you know, will it recover from this stage? Now, some of it's good. It's not going to be quite as bad as you think, but it was 80 miles wide and going across there. So that's going to hit a whole big chunk of Nebraska, Iowa, northern Illinois, and stuff along the way. So, you know, how much damage is it going to really cause? Why we can't get totally pulled into it, but it sure won't help the ending yield, that's for sure.
What do we expect after the USDA report then? I suppose it depends a lot on what they show. But at that point, we will be not very far off, I would think, from harvest within the next month or so.
Well, you know, I mean, as we go past it, then we're going to be looking at weather forecasts. We're going to be looking at yields. a lot more to see what it actually is. We know the guesses have been high and good, but like you say, we could trim back a little bit for what's happened with the wind, and we can trim back a little bit for some of the areas that were overly dry, but we got extra moisture in Iowa where we needed some of it. I think the biggest thing we're going to look at and see how the Chinese, the negotiations or the talks over how we're progressing on phase one on Saturday are going to have one of the bigger outcomes of all this, because if we see that they are going to try to make the phase one deal and try to make their goals, and they will continue to buy like they have in the beans lately and maybe add some corn, that could be the stimulus that could pull us out of this doldrums in our markets.
Hey, one other thing. Next week, Pro Farmer will be on the road with their Midwest Crop Tour. No evening meetings. Those will all be by Zoom. I'll try to put some details up on that. But we'll have the folks on both the Eastern and the Western leg on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week. I talked to them this morning, so they'll be able to assess the damage, too, a week later. That should be interesting to hear from them.
Oh, that'd be a big deal. They have feet on the ground actually looking and walking in the fields. I was talking to one of the crop scouts out there from Bettendorf, and he said, you know, until we can get up in an airplane and sort of fly over and see how bad it really is, it looks terrible from the road and whatever that way, but given the time period to give it another week to maybe straighten up a little bit would be a lot of good information.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne, and I look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Don't forget USDA reports tomorrow at 11 o'clock. You can follow along on our website at willag.org, or if you prefer, you can check my Twitter account out at Commodity Week. Well, Emerson Nafziger is here to talk about yesterday's windstorms across Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Indiana as well. This was a big storm that moved pretty quickly. The straight line winds were 90 miles an hour and above, 100 miles an hour in some places. Clearly, Iowa took the brunt force of this particular storm, and people are wondering what kind of impact that might have on the crop. Mostly they ask about corn. We'll get to that in a second. Any reason to be worried about soybeans?
Well, someone commented to me this morning that the soybeans sort of leaned over more than corn in the area they were in. There's not very much concern about soybeans. They don't have heavy pods yet, so most of those are probably going to stand back up. Wind speeds never really get, you know, to what they are 6 feet above the ground. They never really get there down at the ground. So soybeans, I don't think there any plants are broken over, and I don't think we'll see much effect from that.
So you had thought about this. You were asked, I know, in email probably more than once about the impact on corn. It depends a lot on how it leaned over and whether it broke, according to what I've seen from you so far. Is that right?
That's right. I was driving when the storm hit yesterday here, and I think we were only probably in the 50-mile-an-hour range, something like that, and it didn't last very long. The corn plants are at a stage right now where they can probably take that fairly well, about as well as they ever can, because they put the strength into the stalk, and now they're trying to fill grain. There's never a good time to get this, but, you know, I think there's two possibilities. One would be that the plants would sort of lean over, and corn is half, maybe less than half, a third to a half through grain fill right now. So the ears aren't as heavy. If they're heavier, then, of course, that puts more pressure on them when the wind blows. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of fields that really look flat, although photographs will go around these days and, you know, one field somewhere that was planted late or planted really early or had something wrong with it might show a plant snapped over. I think what we'd most likely see would probably be root lodging, which means the stalk didn't break, but the plants leaned over. That's the more benign of the lodging we can get, or stalk breakage or plant damage from wind that we can get now. And it generally means if the soil moisture remains fairly good in most places, part of that root system that pulled out of the ground is going to be missed, but not greatly missed, and the rest of it can probably make up for it. So those should continue to fill pretty well, more or less in line with how much they can keep their leaf area up, out, and in the sunlight. And in most fields, that happens pretty well. So we're, you know, leaf area, I don't think, got blown off the plants. These plants are pretty tough. Canopy color is good. The prognosis for them continuing to fill kernels till they get to pretty reasonable kernel weights is pretty good. I don't think we're probably looking at more than, say, a 10% loss of the kernel weight that would have been there. That's a big loss. We never like to see it, but I think a lot of those fields are going to yield pretty well. Where the stalk actually kinks over, and I say that because stalk breakage or the green snap we hear about, it's pretty late to see much of that. That would be the stalk basically detaching at some point at a node. The kink in the stalk, what I refer to as the kink, is more in the internode, so between the nodes, and it just bends over and sort of gives way there. So those plants will be leaning over from that point upward, and wherever that happened is going to make a difference. If it happens relatively high on the plant, and the most of the time the plant leaves and so on above that kink can stay working. They may not work at full rate, but the water can still get there and sugars can still move in the plant to the ear. And that's really what we're interested in now as these seeds fill out. So if we can continue to have green leaf area and you see these fields and it looks like they're taking in most of the sunlight and still doing their thing, then the plants have a remarkable ability to put this kind of event behind them and continue to fill. The big disaster would be where plants are actually snapped off, and some very late planted ones could be that way. But they strengthen up pretty well during the month of July in most cases, and by the time we get to roasting ear stage, it's pretty hard to break a corn plant over. 100 miles an hour might do that, and you know, if it snaps off below the ear, of course, that plant's a goner, and other plants around it would make up for it. So I don't think we'll see any yields being, you know, fields where yields are going to be half what they would have been otherwise. But I haven't seen every field, so I won't rule out that that's a possibility. It probably won't be in Illinois.
All in all, pretty tough to have a big impact on national yield, given we'll get that first number tomorrow from USDA.
Almost surely. You know, our crop ratings edged up a little bit more this week. So, you know, we're getting up there in the upper 70s, good plus excellent. And that's just a good crop developing. And it looks like moisture supply is not going to be a big issue. So, yeah, I don't think that this event is going to have very much bearing on it.
Thanks so much, Emerson. Emerson Napsicker is an extension agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He mentioned that weekly crop progress report. It was released yesterday afternoon by USDA and showed 97% of the corn crop around the nation has silked. It is 59% in the dough stage. That's ahead of the five-year 52% rolling average. 11% of the crop has entered the dent stage, the normal rolling five-year average is 12%. And the condition of the crop, as he mentioned, 53% good, 18% excellent. So that's 71% good to excellent around the whole of the United States. Last week, those numbers were 55% good and 17% excellent. Soybeans blooming at 92%. 89% is the rolling five-year average. 75% have set pods. 68% is the five-year average. And the condition of the soybean crop in the nation, 57% good, 17% excellent this week. Last week, those numbers were 58% and 15% respectively. Now here are updates from the statisticians across the Corn Belt.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Regional Office. Most of Iowa saw little to no rain as farmers had 6.4 days suitable for field work during the week ending August 9, 2020, according to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service. Fieldwork activities for the week continued to be spraying, harvesting hay, and grain movement. Top soil moisture condition rated 22% very short, 39% short, 39% adequate, and 1% surplus. For the first time since the week ending September 17, 2017, the state's top soil moisture condition rated over half short to very short. Subsoil moisture condition rated 16% very short, 37% short, 46% adequate, and 1% surplus. This was the first time since the week ending October 1, 2017, that the state's subsoil moisture condition rated over half short to very short. Corn was 66% in the dough stage or beyond, 12 days ahead of the previous year and 5 days ahead of the 5-year average. Corn in dent stage reached 9%, which is over a week ahead of the previous year, but just 1 day ahead of the average. Corn condition fell to 69% good to excellent. Soybeans were 94% blooming or beyond, 4 days ahead of average. Soybean setting pods are 2 weeks ahead of last year and a week ahead of average at 83%. Soybean condition fell to 70% good to excellent. Hay condition continued to decline and stood at 60% good to excellent, while pasture condition fell to 37% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Greg Tyson.
This is Steve Parn of the National Agricultural Statistics Service reporting Illinois crop progress and conditions. There were 5.6 days suitable for field work during the week. Statewide temperatures averaged 69.2 degrees, 4.6 degrees below normal. Topsoil moisture supply was rated 2% very short, 21% short, 65% adequate, and 12% surplus. Corn dough was at 66% compared to the 5-year average of 64%. Corn dented was at 10% compared to the 5-year average of 16%. Corn condition was rated 1% very poor, 4% poor, 16% fair, 58% good, and 21% excellent, up from the previous week. Soybeans blooming reached 91% compared to the 5-year average of 90%. Soybean setting pods is at 74% compared to the 5-year average of 70%. Soybeans condition was rated 2% very poor, 4% poor, 16% fair, 58% good, and 20% excellent, up from the previous week. This has been Steve Parn with USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
This is Dan Lofka, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Warm and dry conditions advanced row crop development during the week. There were 5.8 days suitable for field work, the most so far this season. Field activities included cutting hay and harvesting small grains, potatoes, and vegetables. Topsoil moisture condition rated 3% very short, 14% short, 74% adequate, and 9% surplus. Corn was 62% in the dough stage or beyond. That's 12 days ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of the 5-year average. Corn condition rated 84% good to excellent. Soybean setting pods reached 91%, almost 2 weeks ahead of last year and over a week ahead of the average. Soybean condition rated 84% good to excellent. Minnesota's second cutting of alfalfa hay was 91% complete, and pasture condition decreased to 65% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Midwest. On Tuesdays, we always take a look at the agricultural energy. Stephen Platt from Archer Financial Services in Chicago now joins us. Thanks, Stephen, for being with us. What in your mind's changed over the last month since we talked?
I'll tell you how volatile the market might become. It really has not moved much over the past month, with the values for crude trading in about the $3 $4 range, between 38.5 to 42.5 on the upside. The market's lack of volatility, rather surprising given the movement in other industrial markets such as copper and zinc. Both those markets have had some real major rallies, but crude oil has pretty much stayed in a tight range. The stability to values really reflects a combination of influences. First of all, the level of lockdowns, we started to move out, which helped the market. But as we moved back into lockdowns in some areas, that hurt the demand. There's been some good recovery overseas, though, which has helped offset some of the negative sentiment in the U.S. Transportation trends haven't really changed much. They certainly have still the school year and also the return to work still being waited for. Levels has been a big factor to consider as well. We did see a reduction in the quota levels by OPEC Plus this past month to 7.7 from 9.7, which was generally expected and pretty much in line with where the demand trends have been. So while the market is moving toward a more balanced state, you still have a lot of uncertainty existing over one OPEC production levels. Will they cheat or will we see them have a high level of compliance? Another factor you have to think about is certainly the demand trends, which is real hard to get a handle on, even by EIA, which is the U.S. government, in some of their latest numbers. They've had some pretty good revisions on both the production side and also the demand side, in which production has held up, is looking like it will hold up better than previously expected in 2021, while demand probably falls more than what they had expected. So they have made those types of revisions in the numbers. We'll get some new numbers on Thursday and Friday from both OPEC and the IEA, which is the International Energy Agency, which will give us some pretty good bearing in terms of what to expect on the supply-demand front. Overhanging stocks are being watched closely as well. That is a key consideration here, given what we saw in terms of a float storage. They have come down, but not quickly. So as we move into through the second half of this year, you're probably looking at still a small surplus and then a small deficit as we end the year. The question will certainly be on the demand side as we enter 2021.
Yeah, so a couple of things that's as related to coronavirus. Has the trade made any speculative bet on whether schools and people will be back at work this fall, or have they stepped aside? And does that mean if we do put people really in schools for a longer time and people back in their offices, that there will be much more demand and a pop in the marketplace? And you talked about stocks in place. How have the oil companies positioned themselves? Because it seems like a tenuous at best situation.
Well, on the demand side and going back to work, it is a key consideration. I think if you see that happen, which I'm somewhat doubtful of, in any mass as we move into the fall, or even going, certainly the school is a big factor too, with respect to movement and people being able to go back to work, both intertwined, are going to be key considerations. And if what you said is correct, I don't think the market has probably priced that in, at least for, you know, at these levels. We could see it bounce even maybe up toward the 45 area. Otherwise, you could certainly see the demand side fall short of expectations, which could bring it down to the lower end of that range and maybe down to as low as 35 on crude oil. If the demand does not shape up, particularly overseas, as expected. You know, I think at this point, in terms of the inventory levels, people have tried to get rid of unwanted inventories. We saw that in Jet Caro, in which you saw movement of inventory into and them switching it over in terms of reprocessing it into diesel. Now, that process has pretty much run its course in terms of getting Jet Caro down to reasonable levels. I think the diesel situation is going to be probably a little bit tighter than what we'll see improve going into the end of the year. And that could actually help out the cracks. The big thing is refining margins. Overseas, those refining margins are not profitable and actually very unprofitable, keeping refinery runs low. If you get unexpected demand coming in during the winter, for example, this winter, both in Europe and the U.S., from higher heating oil demand, it could lead to some tightness in the diesel market.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois, and helped us to wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.